Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 167 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. I know I said last week I wasn't sure if we were going to have a pod on Sunday, but here we are. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's Sunday evening. We are starting this podcast in the bottom of the seventh inning, actually, of the night game that is transpiring. And joining me, as often, Eric Cole is here. Hey, man.
Hey, man. I'm feeling pretty good about how this podcast is going because your boy Tukey just struck out Goldschmidt as soon as you did the intro, so I'm feeling pretty good about how this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a chance right now, just for people that don't know or may want to know why we're recording at this weird time. It's 9:30. I've been traveling. I just got back. Family stuff without getting into too much depth. It's not been a terribly fun week for me on the personal front. So here we are, and we're recording before the game ends because neither one of us wanted to go until like 11 o'clock. So perhaps the Braves will pull this off. They're down 3-0 in the bottom of the seventh, and we will update you if things get weird on this podcast. With that said, we can talk about everything that happened before now this week, and by the end of this, maybe we'll know the resolution of the game because we end up talking for a while usually when Eric and I get together.
So, usually.
Yeah, so let's just run through kind of what happened. There was a couple of big things that transpired. We'll save sort of the big picture items for later. There was a trade, I guess we could start with. That was the first thing that happened, technically, since we recorded last week, was the trade for Anthony Swarzak. That is a trade that happened. That was weird. I will say this. I mean, not that we're going to spend too much time on this, but trading someone who can't pitch, who's on a one-year contract, is interesting. Granted, it was arbitration and all that stuff with Aroitis. And then Jesse Biddle, who had a rough go of it, and buying low on Swarzak, who at this moment in time when we're recording has three appearances with three innings, no runs, one hit, five strikeouts. So the early returns are good. I'm always skeptical of relievers, but because he was really bad previously, he was awesome for a while and then wasn't so awesome. But what did you make of that? It was like almost a week ago now, but that was sort of the first thing that happened after we recorded last Sunday. So what was your reaction to that trade?
It feels like both teams were like they went like the Mariners were just going to release Swarzak anyway because we're at least trying to get rid of his money in some form or fashion, and the Braves were just we're done with Vizcaino and Biddle, and so it feels like on the Braves side at least they're just like releasing those two guys but with upside, you know what I mean? Like because I mean if Swarzak ends up being something, then that works out great for the Braves because, you know, obviously Viz wasn't going to be back this year and he wasn't going to come back with the team. I wouldn't imagine, especially if they made this decision. And then that combined with the fact that Biddle was just broken. And it hurts me to say that because, I mean, he was a guy I really liked in the minors. But I don't know if it was the yips. I don't know if it's a mechanical thing, you know, or a mental thing or whatever it was. He just couldn't throw strikes anymore. And when he did, they were just grooved pitches that got hit really hard. And, you know, there just wasn't a future for them here. And as a result, you know, I didn't see them pitching much for the Braves going forward anyway. And if you're going to, really, quote unquote, just get rid of them or cut bait with them, if you can do this and possibly get a piece back that might give you some value, I'm all for it. Because, again, it felt like I think after the money came from the Mariners, it was like the salary was a wash.
Yeah, I mean, it's a move that's obviously defensible, and I wouldn't have too many expectations for Swarzak, but he is a talented guy who's been good in the past. He has not been good recently, as we mentioned a second ago, but it's a buy low opportunity. There's no risk because if he's bad, they'll just cut him, and they already had that money out the window. So, yeah, it's fine. Which that was sort of in my notes first because it was the first thing that happened between last week and this week, but that was not a huge ticket item. We'll follow that as we get along here. To the actual results that transpired, the Braves won a series in San Francisco, which we talked about this last week with Scott and I. It was a situation where you want to go in and win that series. I know it's not always easy to forecast victories in series on the road, but the Giants are pretty bad. And, you know, they took 2 of 3. It took care of business. You know, the Tuesday game was the lone blemish, and it was a blown save from Luke Jackson in the ninth inning. He didn't even pitch that badly, frankly. I thought he was okay. He just
had ground balls found some holes and some weird like bounces that just shouldn't normally happen. Did, and this is what happens, you know.
Yeah, it was one of those nights where you kind of shake your head. But there have been plenty of evenings already this season where people have been, including myself, been really frustrated by the bullpen. That really wasn't one of them. Like, he didn't, you know, it's a frustrating loss, and that you thought that's a game that you probably should have won and you could have swept the series. But that wasn't like blast Luke Jackson on the way out of the building that night. Like,
he didn't get lit up. It's just
no. You know. That's one of those things that just happens. It's baseball, and, you know, it is what it is. Julio Teheran was effective in that game, by the way, which is interesting because he's pitching. He pitched tonight. He's now out of the game, as you mentioned before, but we'll come back to him in a little bit. But taking 2 out of 3 there, your son, Mike Soroka, had 2 great starts this week, the first of which was Monday, was lights out, flirted with perfection for a while on Monday. And then cooled off a little bit, but still was awesome. And then came back later against St. Louis, different opponent, better opponent, and pitched great again. He has a 1.07 ERA, Eric. And by the time he pitches his next start, it will almost be June, if not already June. That's pretty good, I think, like Maddox-like. He's not going to be Maddox. I always have to say that. Maybe you won't say that because maybe you think he's Maddox because I know how you feel about him. But he's very good. So we could spend some time there just so you can, like, pound your chest, I guess, a little bit on your favorite son.
So it's funny to me because, I mean, we've had this conversation on this podcast and we've had it on the Road to Atlanta podcast. Like, we get asked this question a lot, at least last year or two, is, you know, which one of the Braves prospects had the best chance to be an ace? And you and I think, are of the opinion that there are very few aces in baseball, period. Right? Like, there's guys that you can, like, reliably call, like, your guy that you would play, you would run out there as a game one starter in the playoff series. But in terms of true aces, there's just not a lot of them. And I think it's just, there's so many things that have to go right for that to be true. You know, you have to, like, be able to pitch big amounts of innings. You have to, you know, you have to have, like, multiple good pitches, and you have to, like, consistently put up really big results. I always answered Soroka to that question because I always felt like his command would, one, make him more efficient so he could go deeper into games, and two, that command combined with his just general mental aptitude was going to give him a real chance to kind of be able to control a game from start to finish. And I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. I'm not projecting him to finish the season with a 1.07 ERA. It's just not going to happen. I don't even remember when was the last time the league, like, a starter had a sub 2 ERA for, like, you know, a qualified starter throughout a whole season. I couldn't even remember that.
Kershaw did it a couple times, I think, but Kershaw was, like, ridiculous.
He's a mutant. Yeah, he's a
and
mutant.
It wasn't this low either. I'm looking now because I remember him doing it fairly recently because you asked. And Clayton Kershaw, yeah, 1.69 ERA in 2016. And then he had that was a little bit of a shortened season, but he did have 2 full seasons, 2013 and 14, where he had a 1.83 and 1.77 ERA in back-to-back seasons, which is outrageous. And he won the MVP the second year because he was that good. But yeah, anyway, your point is a good one, though. No one posts sub-2 ERAs in this day and age, really. And they definitely don't post 1.07 ERAs.
Yeah.
So and it's going to cool off. But
I might be in the minority in that I kind of like that they're doing what they're doing in terms of limiting his workload. Like, he has had, like, he's pitched into the eighth. You know, he's kind of pitching, like, into the seventh, eighth inning range. But he's, like, only been in, like, 80 pitches, and everyone seems to get really mad whenever they take him out of a game. But he's coming off a shoulder injury, so I don't have any problems with them doing – like, he's if you're getting upset that he's already thrown 7 or 8 innings and they're not letting him, like, finish out these complete games, even though he maybe could, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, the bullpen's going to have to be figured out one way or the other. You can't just run him out there and run him out to death, especially coming off the injury. So I'm actually fine with it. I like the way he's being managed, and obviously the way he's pitching has been pretty insane. You know, he just doesn't give up hits. He's, you know, striking out batters at a decent clip. He's not giving up walks. Like, the home run he gave up to Crawford in that San Francisco series was a solo shot, and it was the first one he'd given up since, like, sometime last year. So
he's silly.
Yeah. Yeah. He's ridiculous.
Otherwise, in that Monday game, which we can go back to real quickly, Austin Riley bombed again. Ronald Acuña hit 2 bombs. Let's just talk about Riley for a second, because he had another home run on Wednesday. He made franchise history with 5 home runs in his first 9 games, which is crazy. His numbers have cooled a bit because I think as of this recording, and granted the game's still going on, I think he's like one of his last 11 or something like that. And his strikeout-to-walk ratio has not been great, etc. And he's down to a more manageable 165 WRC+, which is still incredible, and still slugging like almost 700. But even with this cool-off, he's been ridiculous. And 5 home runs in 49 plate appearances now, and it was even less than that a couple days ago, is kind of speaking for itself. Like, he has been lights out. You can't really ask for more. He had one bad moment in the field today, and he's had some issues with Ronald Acuña, like, calling off each other and just some weirdness there in the outfield. But all things considered, the first 50 plate appearances or so of Austin Riley's career have gone quite well.
I mean, absolutely. I expected some weird stuff to happen in the outfield because, I mean, like, you threw in the guy for, like, 5 games in Gwinnett in left field, and then it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's not a huge problem.
Yeah, no. He's not going to be a gold glover out there. I just don't see that happening. But, you know, in terms of, like, miscommunication, I mean, keep in mind that Ronnie's, like, just had to take over center field, too, and he hasn't been in that position a whole bunch because Ender had been there. So it's like, you know, there's just going to be miscommunications, you know, who's supposed to get what-to-what balls and all that other stuff. So I don't really put too much worry in that. The only thing about Riley, and we were kind of talking a little bit about this before the podcast, was that, I mean, obviously the hot start's insane, and we've liked Riley a lot. But the question has always been with his hit tool and whether or not he's going to strike out too much, and, you know, whether or not it's going to really dip into his value in terms of getting to his power regularly. He's gotten to that power regularly, but he's also sporting like he's striking out a third of the time of his plate appearances.
Yes, and so far right now it's 18 strikeouts and 49 plate appearances, only 1 walk. So that ratio is going to have to improve, and it can't be that it will not be this bad. But
no, I don't think so. But
that is a if you're looking for anything to pour some cold water on it, that's it, because he's just not going to have a BABIP of like 420, and, you know, he's still going to be a good hitter. I think we're pretty confident in that, even as someone who was never like full like. Austin Riley is an uber elite prospect in my past. He's a good prospect, and he's going to hit. But if you're worried at all about anything, it's probably his plate discipline right now.
Well, yeah, and it's discipline, and he's seeing a lot of deep counts. You know, he's still learning how guys are adjusting to him, too. You know what I mean? Like, that first week where, like, he just wasn't making outs at all, you know.
It got to be kind of ridiculous for the first
5 games, you just couldn't get him out. And if you did get him out, it was like he, like, lined a ball right at somebody and almost killed him. You know what I mean? It's, you know, he was really hot in AAA. He still is hot right now. You know what I mean? It's not like, he's like had like a 3-game lull. You can't really draw too many conclusions from that as much as you can't draw too many conclusions from his hot start. I will say that, you know, he is a guy that could, like, you know, slide. It's like a stereotypical cleanup hitter, but don't expect him to hit over 300. I just don't think that's feasible. I do think the walk rate's going to get better. I'm hopeful that the strikeout rate gets better. He is going to be a guy that does have some swing and miss, too. That's just the way he is. And it's, I don't think it's necessarily going to be something that's damning, but, like, for all the people who are like, you know, this guy's like the next coming, like the next big rookie to come out, and he's actually going to win Rookie of the Year, I might want to pump the brakes on that until you see a little bit more, because I've watched Austin a lot, and I've seen him go on hot streaks before. And this one's particularly insane, but I've also seen kind of the flip side where, you know, sometimes, you know, a league or a level, you know, adjusts to him, and then he has to make his adjustments back, and those just take some time, and that's not a problem.
Yeah, even guys who are better prospects than Austin Riley, a la Ronald Acuna, have some lulls when they first arrive. It happens. So nothing to worry about at all. And obviously he was fantastic early and hopefully will continue to be fantastic. But just some context there. And I know you've seen him a lot more than I have.
Going. I mean, you're you've seen like prospects that were higher ranked and are more highly thought of struggling right now. Eloy Jimenez hasn't been particularly great for the White Sox. You know, Tatis Jr. is injured and you have Victor Robles who has had his like ups and downs too. And I mean, Juan Soto hasn't even looked that good this year. So
no, he's cooled off considerably from his ridiculous rookie season. So
yeah,
this stuff happens early on in a guy's career. So nothing to worry about. And obviously, Riley's been really good. I mentioned a second ago that he bombed on Monday and then bombed again Wednesday. Acuna hit two home runs on Monday, and I saw this stat flying around, so I wanted to touch on it real quickly. Acuna played his 162nd game on Friday, so his first, you know, quote unquote, full season worth of games. And I think people have almost forgotten how ludicrous this is, but at his age, his numbers are silly for his first quote full season. 37 home runs, 32 doubles, 5 triples, a 138 WRC plus, about 5.5 Fangraphs WAR, about 6.5 Baseball Reference WAR, and a slash line of 289, 367, and 533 with quality defense. We kind of been conditioned to this with Ronald Acuna because we just talked about him for so long, and it's almost goes without saying at this point, but it's worth noting every once in a while just how crazy that is. And I mean, I'm not even sure what else that I want to say about it other than he's just ridiculously good. And any, you know, when he has like a 4 or 5 game cold streak, people start worrying about him. It's like, nope, he's awesome. Don't worry.
Yeah, it all averages himself out because, you know, he'll have like 3 games where he only gets like 1 hit or something, but then he'll also have a 5 game stretch where like you can't get him out. And he like single-handedly wins the series for you. Maybe you might call him a little bit streaky in that sense, but when his hot streaks are what he can do, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, he's again, those numbers speak for themselves. That's basically, it's definitely all-star level production. It's not quite MVP level probably, but like it's the next step down. And he is, as we all know, he's still extremely young to the point where him doing this at this point, like he's still 21, which is
yeah,
that's outrageous. He turns 22 in December, so this full season will be 21 years old for Ronald Acuna, and he's, doing well. No problems.
Yeah, I don't think we're too worried about him.
No, just want to put that out there. The rest of the week was, it wasn't like huge swings. You know, the one loss on Saturday so far, and they might lose tonight as well as we record this. Saturday was the Dan Winkler Variety Hour in the eighth inning with a 4-run sort of implosion. I candidly missed that live and had to watch it back just to see what happened. It wasn't great. And it wasn't like the Braves, you know, were dominating the game at that point in time. Like they still sort of could have lost with a relatively normal performance. But, you know, that was the end of the game, essentially, when Winkler got beat up in the eighth. So, I mean, after back-to-back wins, actually, three straight wins against the Giants the last two games, including a 13-inning marathon on Thursday, and then a series-opening win on Friday. To have that come crashing down a little bit on Saturday was unfortunate, but in the spirit of being positive, there were a lot of positives before that because, you know, Thursday, they had the great Tukey and Luke Jackson performance coming together for 4 scoreless innings. And then Dansby Swanson and Mike Foltynewicz dominated on Friday. Dansby had 2 bombs on Friday, and then we had some good Folty on Friday, Eric, which we should definitely discuss.
Yeah, we needed that.
Yeah, I mean, that's something like, it wasn't just numbers, too. Like, he visibly looked better. The velocity was better. His stuff was better. And that is a very encouraging thing. As we've been on record, I know you have in multiple places as well as I have. He's kind of the swing guy right now. Like, if he's awesome and the guy he was last year, this Braves team looks a lot different in a very good way.
Yeah, I was really skeptical as to whether or not Folty was completely healthy just because, like, you know, how bad the slider looked. You see a dip in velocity and you kind of remember back to spring training where the slider was the pitch that was giving him the most problems with his elbow. And, you know, I take them for the word as that, you know, there were bone spurs, so it's something that can be managed. But, you know, it was certainly something that was kind of in the back of my mind a lot is this, you know, is he completely healthy? And he looked a lot better on Friday. He may still not be 100%, but maybe they've kind of figured something out mechanically that works for him or something that just has improved over time. I mean, the body does heal and it just takes time sometimes. And he maybe felt particularly good on Friday. And that's a positive sign because, you know, when you have Fried and Soroka going the way that they are and, you know, Julio Teheran, you know, and Gausman kind of being a little bit a little bit iffy at times. You know, sometimes the luck's there, sometimes it's not. And, you know, you need a guy like Fulte to kind of be a kind of a steady influence in that rotation. And he had just been – had not looked good since he had come back from the IL. And I'm glad that he looked good, and I want to see more of that before I'm like kind of like – I feel more comfortable. Because
oh, certainly.
But
I mean, this
it was
is,
good to see.
This is oversimplified. But just the theory of the rotation, it just looks so much different if Fulte is the guy he was last year or close to that. Because, you know, even if Soroka and Fried cool off, those guys you would feel very good about alongside Fulte as your top three. And if you're slotting in Gausman as your four and Julio as your five, that's fine. Like, it's not terribly sexy, especially with Julio, but Kevin Gausman has been a solid starting pitcher for a while. I think he is not terribly sexy, but he can certainly pitch for you. If he's your fourth starter, you're in good shape. If he's your third starter, it doesn't feel quite as awesome. And that means, you know, it's just a lot of flexibility there. But Fulte, if he's really good, suddenly you have three guys you feel really good about, because I know the fan base is very much all in on Soroka and Fried. So if you have those three guys...
As they should be. As they should
yeah,
be.
I mean, Fried's... I'm not sure Fried has been quite as good as everyone thinks he's been, but he's still very good. Like, he's been very good this year. And it's more of a difference between, like, people think that he is a number one. I'm not sure he is, but that's a distinction that doesn't necessarily matter too much. Like, him being a two would be very good. Like, it's not a problem that he's not maybe not a elite guy, and the peripherals and all that stuff. It's not a problem, I promise. So if you have Fulte, Soroka, and Fried all healthy and cooking, you're in really good shape, and that kind of is the window that was provided with that Fulte performance. It's only one start, which has to be said out loud because he was not great before that. And if he does right. it again, I'll feel better. But what we saw on Friday when Fulte pitched like that is something that has to excite everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the stuff about Fried is just kind of interesting, that he's going to have games where he's just not touchable, just because when you have that kind of stuff that he has where, like, you can throw upper mid-90s,
yeah, he just
mid
looks
to upper
ridiculous
90s,
sometimes.
he looks completely unhittable. But then there are going to be times where he, like, struggles to throw strikes, and he struggles with his command and stuff like that. And, you know, he has to dial things back just to be able to get the ball over the plate, and maybe looks a little bit more hittable and will give up some home runs here and there. But, you know,
it's still a really good profile, he has a really low BABIP right now. For instance, his peripherals are more of like in the like the low to mid three range. His ERA is 2.88,
which is, by the way, totally fine. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Really, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I'm super low on Max Fried. I'm not. He's very good. But if you believe the peripherals from this year, he's more of a two than he is a one, which is not a problem. Like, if that guy's a number two starter, you're in great shape, because then
if you have a pitching prospect that turns into a number two for any amount of time, you're good.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, he's not walking guys. His walk rate's basically a career best right now. Even in the minors, he was not walking two guys per nine innings. So if that continues alongside everything else, he's very good at baseball. He's on pace for like a, I don't know, 3-win season,
which would be awesome.
Yeah, like, it's really good, so don't worry. But yeah, all that to say, if you have a top three of Fried, Soroka, and Fulte, followed by these two, you know, Gausman's not really that old, but he feels like probably older than he is, these two veterans at four and five with depth behind them and the young guys, that's pretty good. Like, that'll work. It's not incredible. It's not what the Nationals are on paper necessarily, although they're a disaster. But it wasn't like they're...
I was about to say, might want to pick a better team.
No, I mean, I mean top three-wise. I mean, with Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin... it may not be that, but everybody else, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good rotation. It's nothing to worry about. And yeah, don't worry. Let's see. I mean, we can talk about tonight's game. I'm trying to wait till it's over, but, you know, for now, they kicked it around a little bit defensively in the fourth inning. It wouldn't matter necessarily if they don't score a run, because right now they have not scored and we're in the eighth. That was the only problem. We mentioned a little earlier with Riley, but yeah, it was defense for the most part. You know, two errors, and you know, it could be 1-0 or 0-0 right now, which they probably could still lose the game. But that was the only thing that really was the blemish tonight. Julio is interesting, and since we're on starting pitching, what have you made of Julio? Because he's been a topic of conversation. Like, he's been fine. I'm not sure it's going to continue, but we keep saying that, and he keeps being okay. Because, you know, he walked four tonight, and didn't look great, but the results were okay. I mean, he, you know, 200 runs that weren't really his fault. And if you ignore those, the result in terms of the earned run column was okay, and it's now he has a 3.53 ERA for the season. It's probably a little bit misleading, but if he keeps doing this and walking between the raindrops, you'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially from, like, if you ignore the fact of what the expectations were of Julio, like, a couple of years ago, and he's just looking for just some production, eating some innings, he's been totally fine at that. The thing that he's been good about is limiting hard contact, period. It used to be, like, last year, you know, he'd just give up a lot of home runs. He's certainly given up some this year, but it hasn't been quite the same. He's been hard to square up in general. He doesn't seem like he gives up many hits, period, which is, I mean, I'm not sure what his opponent's batting average is against this year versus last year. Last year was kind of like insanely good, and it's still, the numbers still didn't look great. You wish he would miss some more bats, but so far it's been fine. You know, I'm with you in that. I question how long it will last, but at the same time, it's kind of hard to argue with results.
You just keep taking it until it stops.
Yeah, I'll have a little bit more problems if like the exercise is option or they're trying to pay him any significant amount of money. But you know, for what you need out of him this year, especially when you have guys that can pitch deeper in the games and you can rely on for those like big game moments, if you will, like those big matchups, whether it be in a playoff series or whatever, you can match them up against another team's one or two. He doesn't need to be that guy. He just needs to be able to, you know, be functional, and he's done that. Like, that's,
oh yeah, I mean, if the playoff series happened right now, he wouldn't start, which is what you want. Like, your fifth starter doesn't exist in a playoff series. Maybe you make him a long man or something, but he's not making a playoff start if everybody else is healthy, and that's okay. Like, you need a fifth starter to eat innings, and he's done that. He's done an effective job, and he's just where he should be at this moment. Like, he's probably overpaid for what he is, but they already had that locked. They already had that locked in. And honestly, his production at this point has been better than you would expect from a fifth starter. Like, doesn't mean that it's going to continue. But if you told me right now, you know, beginning of the season to end of May, Julio posts a 3.53 ERA, everyone should take that every single time. And that's what he's done so far. It's not been pretty every time, but it's working. So cross your fingers and hope it continues.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We'll see how long he can stay healthy. Last year, he kind of had a lot of minor injuries sort of cropping up kind of around the middle part of the season. He started missing starts here and there. And, you know, the one thing about this whole situation is that I'm kind of glad he's pitching well, because there's no one in Gwinnett at this moment in time that's really kind of trying to latch on to a start. Yeah, there's no one really starting, because, I mean, they keep ferrying Kyle Wright and Tuki Toussaint like back and forth between Gwinnett and the Braves, which I get why they're doing it. I do. But at the same time, like, it's hard for any guy to kind of get in a rhythm and figure out exactly what his role is on the team. And I can imagine it will affect their performance at times. Although I must admit, Tuki is currently in the game and he's, you know, hasn't given up a hit or a run and struck out like a pair of batters. So we'll see. But I wish that, you know, that would kind of end, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, it's not fun. I mean,
I get why.
And part of it is that, you know, What we were just saying, there just aren't starts available as long as Julio is in the rotation, because nobody else are taken out. Bad. You're not. I mean, it is. I mean, the bullpen is what it is, and we've talked about it ad nauseum. But you know, ideally, you would right now you would have Tuki Toussaint in the rotation, and he's not there right now because you know you have Julio Teheran, who's been fine, obviously, and you're not taking any of the other four guys out for one of the young guys. So as long as Julio is okay, this is a rotation, barring injury. Like, that's it.
Yep.
I mean, these are the five guys, and, you know, in some ways that's unfortunate for the young guys who are trying to break in, but no one's been up. The top four are very safe as long as they're healthy, and then Julio has been fine, so you can't take him out. So it just kind of is what it is, and it puts Tuki and Wright and Bryce Wilson and whoever else in weird spots, but that's just kind of the nature of the beast right now.
Yep.
All right, Eric, we're going to come back in just a second. But before we do that, here's a word from the old sponsor.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog." She's like knocking on the door, going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back. And instead of talking about the week, unless something crazy happens in this game, we're going to assume the Braves lose tonight because it's 3-0 and they just got retired in the eighth, so they're going to need some heroics in the ninth to pull off a victory. One last thing that I forgot to mention: we've been making fun of Nymar Kakis playing every single day forever. He had the day off on Thursday, so we should at least say that out loud. Shouts to Snit for giving him the day off on Thursday.
I thought it was a typo on the lineup. I swear to God.
I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, it's almost become an easy joke to make, and one that is also grounded in seriousness, because, you know, we just all saw what happened last year, and then they went out of their way to say that they were going to give him a lot of days off this year and give him a lot of rest and appropriate rest, and it's just not happened at all. Which, you know, as long as he's hitting, it's okay. But it's just kind of funny, and it finally happened, and it was the afternoon game against Bumgarner and all that stuff, and they were just kind of a perfect storm, 3:45 start, and oh, Marquez is out of the lineup, and everyone made the same joke, and it was just one of those times that's always fun. So,
yeah. One of those things. I really hope that kind of changes, because obviously he had a really hot start to the season this year.
Yep,
but like,
he was good. But,
and then in May, he's been like a 100 WRC plus player. And
which is fine. That's all he needs to be.
I mean, as long as that regression doesn't happen any further that more than that. Because, I mean, he's definitely looked at times where he just hasn't looked particularly good at the plate.
No, and, I mean, at this moment, he has a 115 WRC plus. Literally to the moment. He's over 3 today. 115 is awesome. Like, if he does that, great. That's built in with the hot start, but it all counts so far. It's still an early part of the season. He's walked more than he struck out. He has some really encouraging numbers in some ways. You know, his walk rate's really good.
Some of the advanced metrics are good too.
He's a professional hitter. It's just what it is. Like, he can really hit the baseball. There's no one's really doubting his ability at the plate and approach. You know, the power is the only thing that it kind of gets, you know, made fun of a little bit, and with good reason. Even with the hot start, he's slugging .433, which is not what you want in out of a corner outfielder. But if he's getting on base, that's all that matters to me. Just do what you're going to do, and he's been very solid. I do think / hope that because he has cooled off, maybe they will treat him the way that they said they were going to treat him early on in the year. And by the way, they have Adam Duvall, who's just like murdering the ball and has been for weeks now.
Well, I'll say this about Duvall, because I get asked a lot about him. The home runs have been there. The home runs have been there for sure. The hit tool and the like regular.
He's Adam
contact.
Duvall. It's just what he is. That's just, this is what he does. Before this gets misconstrued, Adam Duvall is not better than Nymar Kakis. No one's saying that. No. The theory would be that you have maybe Camargo goes down and gets his swing back a little bit. You bring Duvall up and maybe do some platoon stuff and have him play against lefties, which is only rarely anyway. And that's an easy way to give Marquez some days off. It's not benching Marquez. He's better than Duvall. No one's saying otherwise. it's just one of those things where
I know what tweets you're going to be getting.
Well, I mean, it's just Duvall is like, you have this 30-year-old guy who has a very defined skill set. Camargo, and we talked about this last week and it didn't happen, which I thought was, it's not surprising, but I think if Camargo continues to scuffle like this, they're going to have to make something happen to make him snap out of it, and it could be some time
before that. It's so sad to watch, because I was so excited that the Braves had found a really good utility guy, and he was really good last year, and he just has not looked good this year.
No, it has not, and I'm not giving up on Camargo by any means. It's just right now he doesn't have it. He's not playing, and you know, it's just a weird situation. And by the way, they ran a 3-man bench for a game this week because Matt Joyce I think it was a family thing, right?
Yeah, I think he lost a family member.
Yeah, so I mean, it was weird circumstances. They called up Kyle Wright, and I was like, wait, they're going to go with an even shorter bench? They're going to have a 3-man bench? Mm-hmm. And we've been calling, at least I have been calling for a 5-man bench, and it was like, oh, by the way, here's a 3-man bench. It's like, okay, cool. That's
well, I mean, there was a lot of like the extra inning game in San Francisco kind of
Yeah, you need to picture. I get the theory behind it. It was just kind of funny.
Yeah, it was just weird.
But yeah, all that to say, we'll see how they handle Markakis moving forward. I think, you know,
just give the guy some days off, man. Let him rest.
Yeah, he just needs to. It's not rocket science. I think it's just kind of weird that they haven't done it more. And I think the argument early was that he was playing so well that you want to get him. I get it. I understand. But, you know, look at what happened last year, et cetera. It's not just him. And that's something that I made sure to say on Twitter a couple times. But the only guy that they've been treating the way that they probably should treat in terms of just rotating guys and giving everybody occasional day off is Donaldson.
Yep.
They're taking care of him. Everybody else is basically playing every single day. And it's okay, especially when the younger guys, like your Ozzies, your Dansbys, they're going to play most of the time. But part of the theory behind having depth and, you know, look at the best teams in the league, your Dodgers and all that stuff, and the way they handle things is that, you know, with very few exceptions, most guys don't play every single day. And this Braves team right now is playing guys every single day. And, you know, Freddie and Acuna, I totally get it because they're that good, and it's just what happens with those guys. They only get the occasional day off because they're superstars. And Donaldson is a different kind of context, but you know, you don't usually see guys on that second tier level, your Dansbys, your Ozzies, playing every single day. And they have been, which is, it's okay, but that might be a way to get Camargo going too, is just play him a little bit more often in the way that the theory of the case was in the offseason, that he could play everywhere, and he's not really done that. It's basically been third base or corner outfield. He's not really played a ton in the middle infield, which is okay, but it's just something to keep an eye on. Markakis is just the obvious one because he's older, and he has the track record of kind of slipping because he probably is older.
Yeah, I mean, and that even if it's not Camargo, like, the problem I have right now is that, you know, Camargo obviously hasn't hit particularly well, and so yeah. I kind of understand their hesitancy to get him in the lineup. But, I mean, if you believe at all in, like, what Charlie Culberson's been doing too, like, you know, if you don't feel comfortable putting Camargo in there, Culberson can play a lot of these positions too. And, you know, just giving these guys days off, like, it's going to pay off a lot in the second half where we've seen second-half swoons from Markakis. We've seen, like, Ozzy got the ass last year. You're going to have to give these guys some more time here and there, and as opposed to just kind of letting them have to hope for days off to come naturally in the schedule. And I don't know. It's a little bit frustrating in some ways, but I also sort of get it, especially when, like, the team goes on, like, a 5-game winning streak and stuff like that. And, you know, the offense seems to be really humming the way it is, and you don't want to mess with it at all.
Yeah, you want to ride it, which I totally get it. And by the way, this week they get a natural schedule break because they have Monday, inexplicably, Memorial Day off day, which is nuts. And then Thursday off day. So they have a 5-game homestand this week with Monday and Thursday off. So this is about as friendly of a rest schedule as you can possibly have in a single week, is to not have to travel and still have 2 days off. So there's something there, I guess. But
yeah. Well, here's hoping. Here's hoping.
Yeah, here's hoping indeed. And then they have the following Monday off. So they only have, 5 games in 8 days. Which in baseball is
like a vacation.
A vacation, exactly. So and they have to travel on the Monday to go up to Pittsburgh. But still, that's something to keep an eye on as they get some guys healthy. Maybe they'll have some fresh legs moving forward here. What else are we gonna talk about? One thing I have to ask you about this contractually, Eric, and that is all the Kimbrel Keuchel stuff came back this week because the draft's coming. And we're gonna end with the draft momentarily. But because of the long-running rumor / notion that those guys will sign quickly once the deadline passes and they're allowed to do so without draft pick compensation, they were tied to the Braves, both of them. Obviously, Kimbrel probably more so, because I'm not sure why you would sign Keuchel at this moment, other than if you got him just for comically cheap. But Kimbrel is the one everybody talks about forever. So anything new on your mind with this? I mean, we're kind of all on record with this one, but now that we're getting close to that deadline and Kimbrel's now been tied to the Braves and the obvious need is there, could it happen? Are we being teased again, or is this kind of a real thing now?
I think part of it's a tease. I mean, just because the Braves make the most sense as a target, especially for Kimbrel, I don't think there's any chance they sign Keuchel, because if you could get him for comically cheap, he would have already signed.
Somebody else will get him?
Yeah, they would have already gotten him.
Well, and the thing is, he doesn't have a rotation spot. I mean, honestly, as funny as this sounds, I think he's better than Julio Teheran, but it's not that big of a gap to where, especially
when
you don't know.
Keuchel's going to want real money.
And that's what I mean. You can't. Yeah. There's not really justification for that. Now that you've seen what Soroka and Fried have been, like, you know, 3 months ago, when there was Soroka uncertainty and you didn't know what Free was going to be, there the rotation was much more up in the air. Now your two best pitchers this year have been young guys. You have Folti coming back. You have Gosman's been solid. There's not really a reason to go and get Dallas Keuchel right now.
There's also the whole he hasn't pitched in half a season.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like I think he's better than Julio, but you know the assumption of that is different than the practice of that. Whereas Kimbrel, you know. The fit, the need, all that stuff is just so glaringly obvious that everyone's going to assume the Braves will be in the mix. And I'm sure they will make calls on him. I'm sure they already have been making calls on him. But it's going to – I'll say this. It's going to bother me if they sign him like 5 hours after the deadline passes just because this the race is going to be so tight, I think, that if they – you know, if they – God forbid they sign Kimbrel on the day the deadline passes and they miss the playoffs by one game. That's all I'll say.
Well,
that's not going to go over well.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but I really do understand the, especially depending on what Kimbrel's demands are. Because you know what?
Well, now that you wait this long, you might as well keep waiting. Like that part I get for sure.
Well, yes, and two is that since the Braves do not have an international free agent bonus pool to speak of for the next couple of years, and they haven't had it in the last year either because of the restrictions external from the penalties that were placed upon them. And if they really feel like they have to like put in a lot of investment into what's going to be coming out of the draft, I do get, especially if Kimbrel is wanting a significant sum of money, because what you lose by signing a guy who has a QO attached to him depends a lot on how much the contract is for. And if he's still wanting a substantial amount of money, and you might be willing to pay him that substantial amount of money, the penalty is going to be worse in that regard. It's not like – I don't think that he's necessarily willing to sign for a 1 or 2 year deal. I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
And no, I mean, he may not. He may now. I mean, I have no clue, frankly, what he wants at this point. He's waited so long.
That's the trick, yeah.
That it's just so weird to gauge that market, and we're not – I don't have the inside sources to tell you anything about that. Yeah. It's just kind of so weird at this point because – everyone probably rightly assumes that the possibility goes up of him signing somewhere in the next couple weeks because of the deadline passing and all the people that might be weary of giving up a draft pick, and you know, Braves included. But who knows, man? It's going to be June, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not like 2/3 of the league isn't looking for a really good reliever right now. So I feel like that, and some of those teams I don't think would care as much about the draft pick so much as how much money he's looking for.
Yeah, and I mean it feels like he's like everything.
I feel like he is just, this is my price, and if you can meet it, great. If not, then I'm just not going to pitch. And that's what it feels more like that with Keuchel. Keuchel's like, no, this is just what I'm worth. He said openly, I've gotten offers that seem fairly lucrative, but I want my price, and that's my price.
And for a starter, I sort of get it a little more, especially he's a little bit older. He's not the most exciting guy in the world, so you know. Keuchel, it's almost like he's waiting for an injury or something to get that very lucrative offer. Kimbrel, I mean, they both help a lot of teams, but Kimbrel just helps everyone. Yep. Like, short of the Yankees, who have that ridiculous bullpen, everybody else could use Craig Kimbrel. There's, like, no doubt about that. He just helps everyone. But it's just this perfect storm of weird market and a reliever who has an agent that wants a lot of money and the draft pick stuff. And, you know, he's made some good money in his career, so he's not like a guy who is going to just sign for nothing necessarily. I don't know. It's just there's a lot of factors in play there. And, you know, my guard is up, to be sure. I think Braves fans' guard should be up. They could sign him. It would not blow me away if they signed him, Craig Kimbrel. We should say that out loud, and at least in my opinion. It would not surprise me that much, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if they didn't sign him either.
And if whatever team does sign him, if you think you're just going to all of a sudden have Kimbrel in your bullpen after he hasn't pitched in a half a season.
Oh, yeah, it's going to take a couple weeks minimum.
It's going to take some time for him to, like, get back into a camp or extend it or wherever to get right, because that's just not how it works. I don't care what kind of workout regimen he's had on this, you know, for this half season or whatever.
You got to pitch.
I don't know. The whole situation is really weird. And, like,
has been the whole time. It's just bizarre. And we haven't talked about it in a couple of weeks now because it just hasn't been a huge topic of conversation. But it was, like, Thursday this week. It's like, oh, we're back. Kimbrel watch. It's like, all right, here we go again. I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on. And if he signs with the Braves, we'll do a podcast about it. That's all I got right now.
It's going to be so funny if it happens right after the draft, though. Like the last pick is called, and then in 30 minutes, Braves are in deep negotiations.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it'd be, like, very on brand for, like, the the manipulation nature of it all. Like, it's the same thing as calling guys up the day of the Super 2 deadline. It's just, it's the whole, you know, not even trying to hide it stuff that happens around the league sometimes.
I'm going to go ahead and call it and say that as soon as the draft ends, there's going to be a story that comes out that says X team, it might be the Braves, it might not, but it's definitely going to be a team, have been in negotiations with Clint Kimbrell for a couple weeks now and appear to be close to reaching an agreement. I guarantee it's going to happen. Yeah,
that's definitely plausible, and we'll see what happens in the next week or two. Last thing here I wanted to mention real quickly is that I often tweet out, it's like a thread that I do every year, every couple days, of five major projection systems and how they treat the Braves and how they look at the Braves. Friday was the first time this season that the Braves had a greater than 50% chance to make the playoffs in all five of those. That comes with just winning more games than they've lost recently, which is obviously a nice foundation. But they're now sort of getting up there with, some pretty positive numbers. It doesn't mean everything, obviously, but these, you know, that's why I track five different systems, because that way you can sort of weed out some of the noise. And most of them see the Braves as like a high 80s win team right now, which probably is good enough to get like a second wild card spot. Does that move you at all from where you were preseason? I know we're 2 months in now. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's kind of the unofficial time to check the standings for the quote first time, end quote. Anything change for you in the way you see this team right now in terms of a big picture sense?
No, I mean, I whenever we did our roundtable at the beginning of the season, I picked them to have the same win total as they had last year, not better, not worse. And my issue with the division as it stands, and some of it's been borne out more than others, I still think the Phillies and kind of how they manage their bullpen and how bad I think their defense is, I think is going to be a problem for them long term. I understand that their lineup sometimes is just going to go wild. I get that. And sometimes, you know, Aaron Nola, I don't think Aaron Nola is going to stay in this bad of shape for the whole season. I think highly of him as a pitcher, but overall, I don't really believe in that team very much. Combined with the fact that I have had zero confidence in the Mets doing any amount of good as a baseball team over 162 game season, and they haven't been doing so. The Nationals have turned into a disaster. They're like 9 games below 500 now, and they don't really have those kind of they have some arms that have a lot of name value, but they haven't necessarily pitched like that. And you know, obviously the Marlins are bad, so I feel like the Braves still have a real chance of winning this division. They're gonna have to do. There's some things that have to break right for them too. Overall, I'm kind of in the same place. I don't feel like they're gonna, you know, be like a 100 win team or anything like that. But I feel like they should be favored to win the division and or at least get a playoff spot. So, and that's what I felt since the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would pick the Phillies to win the division, both because they have a 2-game lead and because I think they're just, you know, they're as good or better than the Braves are. But if I had to pick a second wild card, it would be the Braves right now. I think the teams that are currently the playoff teams at this moment would probably be the teams that I would pick, and that is Philly, Chicago, Milwaukee, the Dodgers, and the Braves. And, you know, I wouldn't, like, bet my life on that, because I think the Braves are close to teams like the Cardinals or, you know, teams like the Padres or even the Diamondbacks, who have been pretty good this year. But, you know, they've done enough to sort of weed off everything here. And by the way, they might win tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. It is now a 3-2 game, and Austin Riley just had an RBI single.
It's now 3-2, and there's no outs because Jordan Hicks can't do things.
And runners on second and third.
Yeah, please ignore all of our previous statements.
They're doing great. We got a good chance to win this game.
That's true. By the way, I checked this while we were talking. At least according to I think this is the ESPN like tracker, they had about a 3% chance to win this game when the inning started, or maybe a 2% chance, something like that. So if they win it, then you can credit us for jinxing or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll keep an eye on that. But yeah, anyway. Dating back to the whole big picture thing, I'm kind of in the same place I've been in as well. Like, the rough start was kind of the rough start, and the bullpen was worse than they ever could have imagined it being. But now, you know, win or lose tonight, and we'll see in a minute if they win or lose tonight, they'll be fine. Like, they'll either be 1.5 or 2.5 games out of the division lead. It's Memorial Day tomorrow. They're in just fine shape and kind of where we thought they were going to be. Like, I picked them to win, like, somewhere in the mid to high 80s, and that's kind of where they are right now. So, we'll see. But, you know, it's probably encouraging more than discouraging, given some of the stuff that's happened early and the way that Riley looks and the way the bullpen can't be worse and all that stuff. So it's been pretty good to this point, despite some of the early frustrations.
Yep, I agree with that assessment. I do. I think that I think they're a playoff team right now. That's what I think.
Yeah, I would pick them to be the second wild card team, and that's not shade. So that's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yep.
Let's keep talking because the game might end. But I wanted to ask before we get out of here. The draft is like what 8 days away, 9 days away at this moment in time. We probably will not have a podcast on this particular podcast. Our fee will have a show, I'm sure, between your road to Atlanta crew. But I have family weirdness going on and work weirdness going on, so I think I'm probably not going to have a podcast next weekend, barring some weirdness. And the draft is like the next day, so let's get some draft takes out there. I have none whatsoever because I am not at all prepared for this, other than listening to you guys and reading our stuff on the site. But please tell people what they should expect, aside from just subscribing to the Roads to Atlanta podcast and also reading our site. Share some insight with people on the draft, which is what, like 8 days away now.
Yeah, it's really creeping up on us. I will say that if you want really like an in-depth look is kind of at how we've viewed the draft, especially as the time has gone on, listen to the last two or three episodes of Road to Atlanta, because we've had Carlos Collazo, TC alum and now draft guru over at Baseball America, and we talked a lot about the draft prospects, and we've been talking a lot about the draft in the last couple of podcasts. I'll say this. Right now there are five names that I do not expect under any circumstance to be available to the Braves at 9, and that's Adley Rutschman, who's the catcher out of Oregon State. If he doesn't go number one, then the Orioles have probably messed something up, or they're doing something really weird with an underslot pick. Bobby Witt Jr., C.J. Abrams, both of which are prep shortstops. Then we have J.J. Bleday, the outfielder out of Vanderbilt, and then Andrew Vaughn, the first baseman out of Cal, who might be the best hitter in the draft. Those top five guys, I can't imagine a scenario where they are available unless something really happens with Vaughn, because he's a first base only guy. After that, you kind of get into this other tier where it could possibly happen. I don't see Riley Green, the prep outfielder from Florida, falling. And Nick Lodolo is an arm that probably won't be there. He's probably the best college arm in the draft, and he might be the best overall. But the guys that you want to be kind of thinking about with the Braves specifically is right-handed starter Jackson Rutledge out of Texas JUCO. Big-bodied guy, throws real heat, has real upside, especially if you think that you can maybe develop to have some more command. His name's popped up a lot recently. Hunter Bishop is the guy I like a lot. He's the Arizona State outfielder, like a ton of tools. The track record of production up before this year wasn't the best, but if honestly he was producing like this he has this year in previous years, he'd probably be a top five pick. Bryson Stott's a shortstop that I really like as well. There's a couple arms. Daniel Espino is a guy that I have learned over the last couple years to not argue with Matt Powers over draft prospects, because he's very often right. And he fell in love with Daniel Espino early on. He's seen him live. And this is a kid that throws mid to upper 90s with his fastball. Really good slider too. The trick with him is that he's a smaller bodied guy. And some people wonder if he has reliever, like he's ends up using a reliever because his arm action is a little bit weird. But the kid, in terms of pure upside and pure stuff, he might have the best stuff in the draft. And most people have been picking him kind of towards the bottom of the first round. If the Braves, for example, took a bat at 9, which is I think what they're going to do, and then they are able to float Espino down to that 21st pick, that's a home run. And that's what we're kind of – that's what I'm personally kind of hoping for. I think Matt wants Espino to get taken at 9 so make sure the Braves get him, and then just take whatever bat or whoever falls to 21. But right now those are kind of some of the names we're looking at as the most likely options. Predictably, something weird is going to happen and it's going to throw everything off. But if I had to guess, those names that I mentioned are kind of the ones that are the most in play, along with Corbin Carroll, who's an outfield bat from the Northwest. He's a prep bat that's also really interesting and might be in play there as well.
Eric, I'm not going to attempt to add anything to that because I have no idea what I would add to that. Just because I'm always candid about this. Prospect stuff's not my expertise. I do occasionally see prospects, and I pay attention to the Braves guys and read all of our stuff. The draft is my blind spot almost completely. I have nothing going. So please listen to Eric, listen to Matt, Carlos Collazo, my arch enemy. No, I'm kidding. Carlos is my guy. We worked together even before Talking Chop. So, yeah, check out that podcast. Check out all of our content over the next week. Is Road to Atlanta coming before the draft?
There will be an episode of Road to Atlanta this Thursday. Not sure if we're gonna have a guest yet. Who needs a guest?
Well, come on.
We don't need one, but if it's possible, if Kylie McDaniel does have time this week, this is probably the worst week to try to ask him. Just because it's right before the draft. But if he does have time, we're gonna try to get him on. Otherwise, it's gonna be a lot of talking about prospects and our last thoughts of before the draft.
Is there a last thing on this, and I promise, is there a doomsday scenario for you in the draft? This is the stuff that my dark mind goes to. Anything that's going to really upset you that they might do realistically? Because that's kind of where the MLB draft is something where, the swings are just bigger. Like, I'm used to covering the NBA draft or the NFL draft, and aside from the occasional just WTF curveball, nothing that weird happens in terms of just picks, and maybe trades get weird. The MLB draft, guys go three rounds earlier, and people won't even blink an eye. So anything that you can see realistically that you would not like, or is a situation where you're just kind of open to a lot of different outcomes?
Okay, so I will say this. In this particular draft class, the college pitching is historically bad. When we had Jim Callis on a couple weeks ago, he said this is the worst college pitching class he's seen in 30 years.
I did hear that, and I was surprised by it, just because that's such a definitive take, but I believe him. I don't know.
So I am fine with a Jackson Rutledge pick, but in terms of the Nick Lodolos, Alex Manoas, those types, I have no interest in them in the ninth pick, because I think that some of these guys, the only reason they're up that high is because college pitching is in such demand and they just happen to be the best ones. I'm not a big fan of those picks. I will say that I may have to talk Matt off a ledge if the Braves select Shea Langeliers, the catcher out of Baylor, there's questions to whether or not he's gonna have an impact hit tool at all. He's someone that will hit for some power, but he's doesn't really walk a ton. Matt doesn't think his hit tool is particularly good. So in terms of a doomsday scenario for me personally, and kind of having to make sure Matt's gonna be okay at the end of all this,
having to rein that in, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's probably the pick. But once you get into the ninth pick is only kind of what matters. Once you get to 21, it's kind of just all of a crapshoot. It's just who fell to you. There's names we like for sure that we think might get down there, but it gets really dicey when you're trying to talk about names down further that far down in the draft. It's kind of just pick the best player available and just hope it's someone that's good. But with that ninth pick, those are the couple. I really want to bat with the pick. With the pick at nine, there's a couple pitchers I'd be okay with, but if they stray from that, I would not be particularly happy.
Are you really excited for the definitive takes from Braves fans that have no idea? Because I really always love that. This is why I don't give takes, because I know I don't know anything.
I'm already getting them.
Yeah, the MLB draft is the funniest one for me, because at least with the NBA and the NFL, a lot of fans have seen these guys. Whether they're super informed on them or not is another story. But most, college basketball, college football are watched by lots of people, and people have been seen. College baseball and high school baseball especially are not being watched by a lot of people. So it's one of those things where I will not claim to have seen any of these people play baseball before. So it's just kind of funny to always see the avalanche of definitive takes from people. I hate that. Mostly because of position, which I always find funny. It's why would they take this? They need this. And it's this is the baseball draft and you can't draft for need. Not a good idea.
My favorite is when there's a prospect that's very clearly not a top 10 pick overall. And someone falls in love with them and they decide that since you didn't mention them as a possibility, that you hate them and you hate their team and you hate all their fans. And
I only know one top 10 prospect that wasn't a top 10 prospect, and that's Kyler Murray, who no longer plays baseball, obviously, because he's now very, very, very wealthy in football. But wasn't he supposed to be a second round pick and he went nine or something?
I think at best a second round pick, because I think everyone assumed he was wanting to play football, and he wasn't particularly. It's elite athleticism, but he wasn't that guy. But I guess the Athletics fell in love with him and they got burned for it, unfortunately.
That stuff happens though, not just because of obviously Kyler's a really weird circumstance, but every year, I do follow it the night of the draft, especially the first round. I'll be watching and following. And every year, there's always one guy feels like that's like, oh, he was the number 57 on my board, and he went number 8 or something crazy. Maybe not that big, but just some crazy reach usually happens, at least perceived reach, because it's a high school baseball evaluation. And it's kind of tough, yep. man.
It really is really tough. I mean, like there's going to be a lot of misses. I mean, all you need to, like, the Rays had a year where like they had like 7 picks in the first like 135 and like they whiffed on basically all of them. So, you know, there's a lot of failure in the draft for sure.
My high school baseball knowledge is confined to my alma mater in high school winning another state championship this year. So shouts to the Parkview High School Panthers. Well,
congratulations.
Who won the state championship at SunTrust Park earlier this week. So
that's right. They did play that at SunTrust.
They did. And I was not there. I was not watching, but it's my alma mater. So shouts to Parkview. Also the alma mater of a very famous Braves outfielder who now does
Frenchie.
So just keep that in mind when you're trying to track down my origin story. There you go. Well, Eric, I'm trying to
all three of you.
I'm trying to, yeah, exactly. I'm trying to keep talking because right now Ozzy's up with second and third one out after McCann strikeout and the Braves are down 3-2 against Andrew Miller. And Ozzy against a lefty usually goes well, but Andrew Miller's good. So he's battling. What? We're now at, nine pitches in this at bat as we are talking now. So
I want to ask you a question.
Yep.
Okay. In your opinion, do you think, look, they scored some. Yay, we're scoring.
Runs.
Yeah, runs, in-play runs. What – you've been covering baseball and for Talking Chop longer than I have. What is, like, the strongest reaction or, like, the biggest moment you have in your coverage of the Braves since they've drafted a player, period? Like, is there any, like, moment where, like, there's, like, a draft night and, like, a pick was made and, like, all of a sudden everyone was either in an uproar or was super excited?
Ooh, in the draft? Yeah. It was probably one of those years when they drafted a pitcher when they just had so many pitchers and they just kept drafting high school pitchers over and over again. I can't think of one like individual pick that got killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it. Cause I started back in 2015 and you know, that was the year I literally just started writing and you know, Allard and Soroka were the picks. And I remember I said that I thought Soroka was an underslot pick and that's kind of high comedy now, but
Yeah, there was one of those graphics the other day. I think it was like a couple weeks ago I tweeted about this too that was like, oh, the Braves draft in that year and they left Colby Allard off. And I'm like, oh, their first pick that year is not on this graphic. And I yes, laughed.
That's kind
I felt
of awkward.
Bad for Colby, but it was just one of those things. I was like, oh, this is convenient.
Yeah, I've always wondered kind of like, because in recent years, I understand that people's interest in the draft and and prospects has like, the last few years has been kind of an exponential rise in both the amount of information that people have access to, but also like how strongly their opinions are formed based on that information, even though it probably shouldn't be. And I'm always kind of curious, like, you know, like back further than whenever I was doing coverage as to whether or not like people actually cared this much about it. Cause I mean, like people get really mad if you don't mention their guy as a potential ninth pick or a potential 21st pick. And I found that out. And it's so bizarre to me. I'm like, how can you be that upset about the 21st pick as to like, and not mentioning a one possible scenario or one possible guy? Like, how can you be in that in love with somebody that you probably only seen like 3 15-second clips of on Twitter?
Yeah, it's just, the takes are just too much. Just to update people, if they somehow missed this game, Ozzy just tied it after a heck of a plate appearance. And then he decided to do a thing on the base paths, which was odd. So now it's tied, which is good, given that it was 3-0 a minute ago. But it's two outs and one guy on third instead of what it should have been. So we're going to probably cut this off at some point and not keep doing play-by-play because this might be a 15-inning game. But needless to say, I did just check. ESPN and Action Network both had the Braves with less than 5% chance to win this game in the top of the ninth. So
I'm going to say the Braves win 4-3. What's your pick? And then we'll see who was right at the end.
Oh, God. Why would you do this to me, Eric? Let's see. The Braves, at this moment, have a man on third still. So I will I would agree with you. Can I not take 4-3?
No, you can take that. We can be on the same team on this.
It's probably the most likely outcome at this particular moment that we're recording this with Culberson coming up. I think 4-3 Atlanta is probably the most likely outcome of this game.
That's pretty well.
Now, if he doesn't get a hit here, the Cardinals become favorites because they have an extra plate. They have an extra plate appearance, or extra half inning batting. But yeah, I would say at this moment I'll say 4-3 Braves, and I'll look stupid when it's like walk off 5-3 Cardinals.
I think that's fair. We should probably let the people go rather than us babble around, though.
Oh, certainly, because by the time you listen to this, everyone will know what happened.
Exactly.
Eric, please, I guess one more time, plug everything that you have going on. I know it's very busy right now in your line of work, in prospects and drafts and all that stuff. So please, one more time, plug stuff, and then we'll get out of here.
Yep. Make sure you're subscribed to the Talking Chop podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, basically all the podcast platforms that you would like. It gets you both this podcast that we're on, but also the Road to Atlanta podcast, which comes out every Thursday. It's usually Thursday in the evening, and we talk a lot about prospects, obviously, but leading up to the draft, there's going to be a lot of draft coverage on there. Matt's continuing to run out like a position by position list as to kind of what's going on with the draft as well. I think shortstops goes up tomorrow. And he's going to be kind of doing that all the way up to the draft. We're going to be doing some previewing some possible Rays draft picks during the next week or so as well. And make sure you're checking out the site at Talking Chop or following the podcast Twitter account at @Road2Atlanta on Twitter as well. You can follow me for at Leprechaun with a K as well if you want to get some major league, minor league baseball stuff, as well as my general rantings at the world when I'm irritated. But beyond that, make sure you follow Brad too at @BTRoland. And, he wants all of your trade proposals, both Hawks and Braves related, so make sure you send all those to him.
Yes, please do, or don't. That's totally fine as well. Follow Eric and the guys. Please subscribe to this podcast via whatever podcast platform you choose, and we'll see everybody in a little while, probably not exactly a week, but we'll be back sooner rather than later, but Road to Atlanta will carry you, so stay tuned for that.
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.